Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome, welcome. This is Ken, the Passion Entrepreneur, your sales and profit evangelist, your chief profitability officer. Thank you for listening in. E3C stands for Entrepreneurship, Empowerment, and Evolution, and the C stands for Connect, Collaborate, Create. We show you how to maximize your sales, your profits, your business opportunities. We teach you the best practices for profitability and sales and share with you new ideas and strategies to take your business to the next level. You check out our website. BetterSalesAndProfitsNow.com. I say again, BetterSalesAndProfitsNow.com. We want you to listen, learn, enjoy, and share. Thank you for listening in. Call online if you want to participate in this discussion. It's going to be a hot one. 646-716-7099. That's 646-716-7099. Today, we're going to talk about the hot topic in the country. We're talking about healthcare. So let me ask a few questions just to get this thing started, and I'm going to go on a rant here, so forgive me. Who is in charge of your health care? Is it you or the federal government? Is it a good idea to have to own your own health insurance policy or depend on your employer? That's a good question, I think. Do you need to change the whole health care system or just correct certain parts of the system? And what is the real issue here? Is it health insurance or your total health? You know, what should we focus on, prevention or what happens after you get diseased or you're sick? So, and here's another question. Why is health insurance so expensive? You know, what can we do to reduce the cost? And the big question, and I got, you know, this is an elephant in the room. Why are we even talking, trying to tackle this issue right now? If the country is in a recession, unemployment is close to 10%, and some experts are predicting that there's going to be no growth, no job growth, for 2 to 5 years. That's insane. Why are we talking about this now? Shouldn't we focus on reviving the U.S. economy first? I think so. Maybe, you know, I'm just a small business person. I don't know anything. But I say let's support small business. Why? Because it creates all the new jobs in the country. Majority of new products and services, and employs 90% of all people in this country, I think that's a good thing. So, President Obama, this is for you and some of the other political hacks and bureaucrats. Where is the action plan for small business? You know, if we can empower small business and entrepreneurs, that's more job creation. And that's not job creation for the government. I'm talking about the private sector. We need to expand the economy. We need to promote free enterprise and entrepreneurship. That's a win-win situation. If we help small business owners, that spurs growth in jobs and the economy. And if you generate new business, new income, that's more tax revenue for the federal government. That's a good thing. That's a win-win situation. But that's another show. We're going to talk about health insurance here. I'm going to bring on Mike Davis and Kelly McCutcheon. Mike Davis is My Georgia Doctor, great company, innovative solution. We're going to talk about what he's doing and what his company's doing, and we're also going to bring on Kelly McCutcheon, Georgia Public Policy Foundation. So let's get started. Mike, welcome to the program.
Hey, Ken, how you doing?
Pretty good, pretty good. I'm a little heated right now, but maybe you can help
tell.
Me. I've got lots of questions. Before we get started, My Georgia Doctor, what is My Georgia Doctor, and what is it that you do?
Well, I appreciate you having me on. It's pretty interesting to always talk about this to various people. My Georgia Doctor is a really an innovative new program. It's been out for about 3 years now, and it's very simple. It's a medical marketing company that sells a medical membership and a flat fee deal for people that either can't afford health insurance, can't qualify for individual health insurance, or just want to pay less because they don't need all of the other bells and whistles.
Now, how'd you come up with that idea? That sounds and nobody's talking about preventive care. How'd you come up with this idea?
That's what we're all about. We came up with it, kind of building on the new ideas that are showing up in some of the wealthier suburbs of this country with boutique medicine, where a doctor, historically would have, thousands of patients, see 50 patients a day, get to spend, 3 to 4 minutes with each patient and move on to the next one in order just to keep the practice alive and to pay his bills. And the boutique idea came out that a doctor would go to a group of 500 customers and just offer his services for $1,000 or $2,000 a year just for those 500 customers and get his business off the ground. And when the patients came in for a consultation, he would have 45 minutes or an hour to spend with them and really get into deep with them. And it's very popular in some of the wealthier suburbs. And what we decided to do was create something like that, but for the common man.
Yeah. So My Georgia Doctor, and if you want to check out the website, it's mygadoctor.com, mygeorgiadoctor.com. What's the website?
Yeah, we bought all the URLs. It's you can type out mygeorgiadoctor.com or mygadr.com or all those. They're all available. Okay. And they all come to our website.
And so where are you located? Are you all in Georgia, the metro area, or?
We have 15 locations. We are affiliated with a doctor's group here in the North Metro Atlanta area called Georgia Clinic. And they've got 15 locations in the North Metro area with, primarily in North Fulton, Gwinnett, and DeKalb. And what we've been doing, or what Georgia Clinic has been doing, has been buying up one-man practices over the last 20, 22 years. And putting together a group of doctors and a group of clinics all under one umbrella, and we now have, 15 locations in the pretty much in the northeast quadrant of the city. According to our statistics, we sit on a population of about 2.5 million people.
Wow! And how many doctors do you have with My Georgia Doctor?
Right now, we have 26 doctors. Most of them, I think, 22 of them, are primary care, family medicine type doctors, but we do have a couple of specialists that participate in the My Georgia Doctor program on a discount basis. We have a couple of cardiologists, a bariatric doctor, and also a pediatrician and an OBGYN.
Okay, so when somebody comes to My Georgia Doctor, what kind of services are they getting?
It's really pretty simple. As soon as you sign up, we want you to come in for a full physical. And if you've ever had a physical, depending on your age and your gender, it can be anywhere from a couple hundred dollars to $500 for a physical. Well, you get that free with our program, and it's age and gender specific. So if a mammogram is called for a woman or a PSA test for a man, it's all done and it's all free and it's all included. And the theory is that we'd rather know, have a baseline of your health and know where you stand health-wise in the very beginning.
Okay. All right. And so do you offer some other services besides the standard medical preventive care services?
Well, we do. But let me give you a quick idea of how this works.
Okay.
We charge a flat fee, $60 a month for individuals, $180 for any size family. We do this with employers and individuals. There's no underwriting. There's no, you want in, you're in. It's you get a physical when you first sign
up.
That
doesn't happen with insurance.
Pardon?
That doesn't happen with insurance.
No, it doesn't. And let's keep in mind, we if you ever go on our website, every single one of our pages says this is not insurance. But what you get is you now, once you signed up, you can go to any one of our clinics, any one of our doctors, anytime you want to, as often as you want to. We have a 7-day-a-week urgent care facility near our Norcross location that allows you, if you've ever been to an emergency room with yourself or one of your kids, you know, you're there for 6 hours and it's $1,000 to get, you know, get a handful of stitches. Well, that's all included in My Georgia Doctor. That would be free. So you go to visit any one of our doctors, any one of our clinics, anytime you want to, as often as you want to. No copays, no deductibles. If you get a prescription, you can run over to Walmart or one of those places and get it filled for $4. And we save you a ton of money. And you get as much care as you want.
That solution is just too simple for government, isn't it?
It is. It is. They just scratch their head. We've talked to a few state level and federal level politicians, and they just say, you know, maybe it works well on a small little sample like North Metro Atlanta, but you know, how would you do that statewide? And we say, you know, our answer is, you know, you pay us $60 per month for everybody in the state, and we will take care of them.
Mm. All right. And so, how's business for you guys?
It's booming. It's booming. It's really been, you know, it's kind of a shame that, you know, with the economy going the way it's going, that, you know, people are finding out how really expensive COBRA is. The government tried to lessen that hit by paying for 65% of your COBRA bill for the first 9 months, but now people are coming up on that ninth month and seeing what COBRA really costs. And so we actually put out a piece recently. We call our product the COBRA Killer.
A COBRA Killer. I like that. I like that. So your best, I guess, patients or customers or clients, who are they? Are they small business people, major corporations? Who are you looking for?
Well, it's really, you know, it's really small business people more than anything. We do a lot of individual policies. You know, you walk into one of our clinics and you know you've got and this is a typical situation. You walk into one of our clinics as, you know, as a regular customer, you don't have any insurance, you know you've got an issue, maybe diabetes or a thyroid condition or something that's making it impossible for you to get health insurance anyhow. You come into our clinic and you see the brochure and you call us up and you say, oh, $60 a month and I can come anytime I want. And, you know, if you have type 2 diabetes, you flat can't get regular health insurance as an individual, as a small business owner. So now you can get, you know, you can come in as often as you want, get your blood levels checked, get your sugar level checked. We run that A1C test, which is the standard test for diabetics, and it's free. You want to come in once a month and have that done? We'll balance all your levels up for you and take that test. And you know, you'd normally pay a couple hundred dollars a time to have that done. And that's what's happening to diabetics. They can't get health insurance. They don't want to go to the doctor. They're so expensive to have that test. And then when it's all said and done, they end up, you know, in not even latter older age, but, you know, just kind of, you know, in their 60s, losing their feet, losing their hands, you know, because of the diabetes, what it does to the circulatory system.
And so this is all preventable. So it's unlimited. You can see a doctor and get services anytime. That's phenomenal.
It is. We were a little worried when we first set it up that we would find every hypochondriac, I'm sorry, in Atlanta, and we haven't. Mm-hmm. I don't know why not, but you know, we haven't had a problem with people just camping out and coming every day because they feel this ache, they feel that pain. You know, the average person is coming in 3.5 times a year. But you know, when they start feeling bad, they feel the flu coming on, they feel a fever coming on, they feel like an infection coming on, a sinus infection or something. They come right in and know they can get it all treated, and pick up their prescription, and there's no charge to come see us.
That's phenomenal, and that's the way it should be. If you're sick, you're feeling ill, you go see a doctor. Now people, I don't want to go see it, or they wait till the last minute, they go in the emergency room,
right.
And that costs money.
Right. And so we really consider our program to be a wellness program because now you're jumping on something as soon as you discover you've got a problem and you're not, you know, waiting to letting it fester because you don't want to spend the money thinking that it'll go away. It's not going to cost you anything. So come on in, get fixed.
Man. Okay.
And like I said earlier, you know, you layer this underneath a catastrophic or a hospitalization insurance program, HSA, which we love. It works great.
Wow, and that's how you can reduce your cost. Most people thinking health insurance is too expensive. Not if you can put in, you know, program like yourself, you know, high deductible, you get the MSA, the medical insurance accounts. So, I mean, anyway, but anyway, thanks. What I'm going to do is I've got some questions for you, Mike, and also Kelly, but I want to bring on Kelly McCutcheon, talk a little bit about what Georgia Public Policy Foundation is doing, and also what some solutions may be. And I want to get you guys going in a discussion. I think it's going to be nice for the listeners also. So, Kelly McCutcheon, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Ken. Great to be
with
you.
Yeah, health coverage, health insurance, this whole health issue. Before we go into that, let's talk a little bit about Kelly McCutcheon. Can you explain, you're the VP, the Vice
Executive Vice President of Georgia Public Policy Foundation. We are a privately funded think tank, for lack of a better word, here in Georgia. We've been around since 1991. We're one of many state think tanks. There's one in nearly every state in the country. We're focused on market-oriented solutions to everyday Georgians, their challenges, whether it's improving our schools, reducing traffic congestion, reducing the burden of taxes and big government and regulation, or something like health care, which is, you know, a tremendous part of the amount of money we spend at every level of government. We're out there trying to provide a market-oriented solution as opposed to a big government solution. And, of course, with this issue, that fits in there perfectly because we're debating in Washington this big government one-size-fits-all solution. And the things they talk about, cost, we've got to reduce cost, provide better access. You know, they talk about coverage, but, of course, coverage doesn't necessarily mean access. People that have Medicaid, and a lot of people don't even sign up for it. They just go to the emergency rooms. They talk about wellness prevention and pre-existing conditions. Well, you've got somebody with my Georgia doctor and Mike. He's figured all that out. It's in the private sector. It's innovative. And they want to put him out of business. If this bill passes, he won't be able to do what he's doing because they consider people that don't have first dollar insurance to be underinsured, and only policies that are approved by the government will be allowed to be sold under this new plan, and it's going to have a very low deductible. Well, it doesn't make a lot of sense to run, you know, every routine expenditure through a insurance claims process. All it does is add cost to add that middleman in there. And what Mike has done is just tremendous, and it's being done around the country in different ways and different innovative ways of doing things, but it's providing care. It's getting that care to people when they need it early on at an affordable price. My goodness, $60 a month with all of these services is tremendous. So we catch people. I mean, think what Mike is saving Georgia taxpayers by people that normally might have had to go to the emergency room, but instead they're getting primary care through one of his clinics. I think, you know, that's a perfect segue into talking about this national health care plan, because we don't need to change everything. We do need to make some changes, but we don't need to kill the things that are working.
Absolutely. If you want to check out Georgia Public Policy Foundation, check out the website is www.gppf.org. That's georgiapublicpolicy.org. So, Kelly, let me ask one question. I'm going to bring in Mike in a minute here. What is the difference between health insurance and just regular coverage? And I guess the point, maybe it's not a good question to ask, but most people believe that insurance is for the everyday kind of stuff. I say that really insurance is for the catastrophic events that occur. You can take care of the day-to-day stuff, the incidental stuff that comes in. You can take care of that. Most people think that I got to get insurance. Okay, well, it's going to cover everything from, you know, getting my teeth cleaned to, you know, stitching up. Maybe that's not a good one, but stitching up a finger or something, or I got a cold. Can you go into a little bit more?
Sure.
Because most people say, I got a health insurance. I need to go see a doctor right now. Talk about that, and what's the impact of the cost there?
Well, insurance is protection of your assets against an unforeseen catastrophic event, a big-dollar event that you didn't know was going to happen. Like, you have car insurance when you have a wreck and your car is totaled, so you don't, you know, doesn't bankrupt you to buy a new car. Same thing for your house. Your house burns down. You don't have insurance for oil changes. You don't file an insurance claim when you paint your house. Those are routine expected expenses. We've gotten off kilter in our nation on health insurance because something we did back in the 1940s where basically we shifted it all to employers and said you can deduct 100% of your benefits that you pay, health insurance benefits that you pay for your employees. But only the premiums are deductible. When you pay out of pocket, that's not deductible. Back then, about 80% of the spending was, like you said, people would pay out of their pocket unless something big happened and they had to go into the hospital. Now, guess how much that is? 13% is what we pay out of pocket. And we think health care is expensive. We have no idea how much our employers are paying for that health insurance. So what that does is it's prepaid health care. I've already paid these massive premiums for my health care, and so now I want to get my money's worth. So people overuse the system. They go and there's a copay of maybe $10, and they don't worry about that, and they don't have any incentive to not use the system, no incentive to shop around for a better price like we do with anything else. We go buy a car, we go online, we get all the information, probably more information than the dealer even knows. When we go to buy the car, we know what their price is, what you want to pay. It's nothing like that in healthcare. No one knows what prices are. Went to the doctor. My daughter had to have an MRI playing soccer and hurt her knee. Asked them, how much the MRI was going to cost. They couldn't tell me. It all depends on which insurance company you have. And so the way we're doing it now, it makes no sense. And that's why these high deductible health care plans, but also with an HSA, so you get that tax deduction on the out-of-pocket expenses, and you get to keep the money if you don't spend it, has dramatically reduced the cost of insurance by 30 or 40%, and it's made consumers cognizant of how they spend their money. And then you link that with an organization like My Georgia Doctor, where you have some peace of mind that you're paying $60 a month. It's a predictable expense, and all your primary care is taken care of. But then if something bad happens to you, if you get cancer or if you are in an accident, that you're covered because then the insurance kicks in. I think that is the key to lowering our health care costs down the road.
I agree. And most people don't realize this, but if you take on more of the risk, it takes away the risk and the cost from the insurance company. So they're going to reward you and say, okay, if you're going to pay the first $1,000 or $2,000 or $5,000 or $10,000, you'll be amazed at the cost reductions you can get by you taking on more of the risk. And
well, it's 30 or 40%.
Yeah.
You can reduce it by 30 or 40% by going with a high deductible. The other factors in insurance costs are mandates. Some states have a tremendous number of mandates that the lobbyists of every little special interest will mandate certain coverages. That increases the cost 10 to 20%. Sometimes some people say even more. And then you've got cost shifting, the uninsured. And guess what? All we talk about is the uninsured. It's about $45 billion. Guess what? Medicaid and Medicare don't pay the full cost of services. The cost shifting from Medicaid and Medicare is twice what the cost of the uninsured is in our country.
Wow.
So it will raise, on average, in Georgia, your premiums are 20% higher due to the cost shifting that we're seeing.
Okay.
So you add those percentages up, 30 to 40% savings for a high deductible policy, 10 to 20% mandates, 20% cost shifting, and you see we can have affordable health insurance if we just make a few changes.
When you talk about mandates if I wanted to get, since I would just want to cover health insurance, I'm not worried about getting pregnant. So why should I have to pay for that? Is that what you're talking about? What are some of the mandates that all policies are?
In vitro fertilization. There's about 150 of them. Some we all would have, and it makes absolute sense. Like a colonoscopy at a certain age is a good thing to include. And you know what? With big companies under federal legislation, ERISA, self-insured companies, they don't have any mandates. Of course, they include a lot of those things because it makes sense. But there are a lot of mandates that, do not make sense. And like you said, I doubt you're going to be getting pregnant anytime soon. So if you're on hard times, but you're trying to keep your insurance and you can get rid of some of those coverages, just like you do with where homeowners insurance is a little more expensive. You can reduce a little of your coverage. You can increase your deductible and save a little money. That's exactly the same thing.
Yeah, okay. All right, then, Kelly. So, Georgia Public Policy Foundation, what I want to do is bring you all back in and just throw out some questions. We've already answered some of the questions already, but I want to bring on you guys. My first question I want to get to, if these are the solutions, why aren't we talking about this at the national level? Why we don't talk about the mandates? Why come we don't talk about, I guess, buying insurance across state lines? We've got, what, 1,300 or so insurance companies? So why aren't we talking about true health care reform? We haven't talked about the malpractice insurance that crosses. But, you know, why are we not talking about things that actually work? Mike? Kelly?
Well, I think that, you know, we're just, you know, we've got too many special interests involved in this. And you've got, you know, one group that, you know, wants tort reform because it just makes sense that if you can limit the huge amounts of money that juries award people for injuries, that if you can limit that to something reasonable, then insurance costs would certainly come down. But the other side, you know, gets a lot of donations from the guys making all this money on the lawsuits. So yeah, the problem is that, you know, you've got too many special interests involved. Just like Kelly was saying about the you know, the individual states having mandates, you know, in vitro fertilization. You know, I shouldn't have to pay for that in my insurance policy. And the price of health insurance from state to state is unbelievably different. Kansas and New Jersey are two extreme examples. You know, we had it happen in our own family. We have a daughter that was living in Boston and a daughter that was living here. Both of them graduated college the same time. And we needed to buy 45 days worth of health insurance for each one of them, just until their employer's policies kicked in. The daughter in Massachusetts paid $431 a month for 45 days, and the daughter here paid $81.
Oh wow, that's a big disparity. Yeah,
it was unbelievable. You know, and both of them were very healthy. There was really no reason for them to have health insurance except, you know, I wasn't comfortable having them run around without something catastrophic, and we got them both almost identical type policies, and yet the daughter in Massachusetts paid five times more.
Yeah, okay.
I think that's what we can be appreciative for our legislators here in Georgia. We have, for the most part, done a very good job of having fairly good health care legislation. We've kept our health care costs and insurance costs below the national average. We do have some mandates, but they're not, you know, certainly not the worst in the country, and, you know, on the better side of things. But you asked the question. Go ahead.
I was just going to say that it's funny because a lot of people come to us and say, "Well, you know, you've got my Georgia doctor. Have you thought about, you know, other states and spreading this around, the, you know, the 50 states?" And the funny thing is that we really determined that that we can take this to the states with part-time state legislatures. The states with full-time state legislatures just have too much time to make more laws, and we simply could not do this in California, in New York, New Jersey, Minnesota. The states that have the full-time legislatures are the ones that are just mandating these costs into these systems.
Well, and you know, a lot of our legislators, because it's part-time, although it's becoming more of a full-time job these days, it's 40 days each year is the session. They have a lot of other meetings and things, but we have a lot of small business people that understand that, you know, what happens when you add a mandated increased cost and somebody's going to pay for that. They understand basic economics, and that's been so critical in our success here in Georgia. But Ken, getting back to the point you asked, why aren't we talking about these things? Politically, you know, the people up in Washington right now that are in control, they want us to move us toward a European-type single-payer system. That's the goal. And so you don't want to talk about the successes. They want to create the crisis that we've got to do something. Nothing, market-oriented systems don't work. They don't want to talk about Safeway that saved 40% on their health care expenses. They don't want to talk about Whole Foods and how successful they've been, or My Georgia Doctor. They want to create this crisis, and get there, either if they want to just outright have a public option, have a trigger mechanism they're talking about now, this co-op, which is really like the Fannie Mae approach, still going to be subsidized by the government, have these federal exchanges, not a state exchange, a federal exchange, which if you want to sell insurance, you have to go through the exchange, which adds all kinds of other regulations and probably prohibits the kind of high deductible policies we're talking about. So it's the politics you have to keep and understand. It's very difficult for there are some good ideas that are up there now, but they're not going to be talked about because I think it is a very partisan battle, and I think the best we can hope for is that nothing happens.
Yeah, if there's some challenges in the Canadian healthcare and the European health model where they're running out of money, they're rationing care, it's people are not being well served. Why are we bringing that to the United States?
Well, it's perfect. Good question. I mean, the Europeans and the Canadians are moving toward us. They've actually said the guy Castonguay, who started the Ontario system, has said we need to open up to more market-oriented private clinics and other things. This is not sustainable. So why in the world are we going to this failed model? We need a uniquely American solution that builds on the innovations that we've had in our markets. We do have to fix some problems, but that is a perfect point. You know, the solutions that they are proposing have got a lot of problems, just like we do.
Mm-hmm. But so what are some other solutions? We talked about maybe getting rid of some of the mandates. What are some other things that would work to correct the situation that we have here?
Prices. We need price transparency. Nobody knows what anything costs, and that's a real problem. It's all siloed. Everyone, you know, hospitals might tell you what their, you know, official rate is, but no one pays that rate except sometimes the uninsured. All the insurance companies negotiate different discounts. They're forbidden from discussing those for collusion and antitrust. And so no one really knows what the price of anything is. And so when most of your consumers are spending other people's money, either government money or the insurance company's money, and no one really knows the price of anything, we shouldn't be surprised that the costs keep going up. So we've got to figure out a way to, in New York, the Attorney General just sued the insurance companies, Andrew Cuomo, and said, you can't tell us how you're basing your charges. You're supposed to reimburse out-of-network 70% of reasonable and customary. You have no basis for knowing what reasonable and customary is. And he won the lawsuit. And what the remedy is in New York State, there's going to be, funded by the insurance companies, a nonprofit that's going to gather all of the claims data and publish, you know, average market prices. So at least, you know, the consumers in New York State are going to have an idea of what those prices are. What that would allow us to do is have, say, an insurance policy that said, tell you what, for catastrophic things, we'll reimburse you for the market price, 100%. So if you find a provider that'll do it for less, you get to put the extra money into your health savings account. If you find somebody and you know a doctor that, you know, you've had him all your life and he charges a little bit more, fine. There's no more networks. You can go to whoever you want to, but you have to pay the difference out of pocket or out of your health savings account. So that aligns the whole concerns about cost of the employers and the government with the consumers. And so they know what the prices are. They're willing to shop around. They may want to pay more, but they're doing it out of their own pocket. That aligns all of the incentives in the right way.
Okay, Mike, so what would you think would be a solution that we haven't talked about, my Georgia doctor?
Well, you know, I just want to add to what Kelly said. I think he's hit it right on the nail right on the head. Here we have, you know, everything in life is what's the value to me? And here we have a system that uses other people's money, OPM. You know, whenever other people's money is involved, you know, nobody cares about what's going on. So we've set up a system where companies get a tax advantage to offer health insurance to their employees. But an individual or a small businessman who's got himself a little store or a little business or whatever it is, he doesn't get that tax advantage to buy health insurance for himself. I say you take all that money that's being spent for health insurance, and you you give the money to the people to go out and buy what they want. And I'll tell you, that will solve the problem immediately, is because now once everyone is out there shopping around, you know, if I need a new roof on my house and the government's paying for it, I'm gonna demand the best roof I can get. But if I'm paying for it out of my own pocket, I'm shopping around and looking for the best guy I can get for the best value for my money.
That goes with the question: who's in better charge of your health, the government or you, or who should own your personal health insurance policy, you or the government? Here's another one that I got from Center for Health Transformation. You can check them out on the web, healthtransformation.net. One solution that they say is stop paying a crook. You know, there's outright fraud, criminal activity. $200 billion every year, and in Medicare alone, it's $40 billion a year. So maybe we could stop, you know, we could maybe go to electronic system, because right now there's overload of paper. People are getting, it's unbelievable the amount of fraud that's in the system right now. Any ideas on that, Kelly or Mike?
Well, that gets to a very important point that the liberals are making. They say, you know, Medicaid and Medicare specifically, they cite as having such low administrative costs. Well, first of all, they do a horrible job at fraud and abuse. Now, our insurance companies, I don't think anybody says they don't do a good job of fraud and abuse. I think sometimes they're a little overzealous in trying to, you know, deny claims because of pre-existing conditions and you didn't fill out the form right. And I think they get, you know, sometimes deservedly so, a bad rap for that. But Medicaid and Medicare just do a horrible job. New York City, in New York State, they estimate fraud is 40% of the Medicaid program.
40%.
And so they're not spending, that's what the private insurance companies, they're spending a lot of money on that. It's not all profit. And if you look at it on a per recipient basis, the private insurance companies compare very favorably administratively to Medicare. So I think that's a great point. We do need to go after fraud and abuse. And when you have government-run programs, that is rampant because exactly what Mike said, it's OPM. No one's looking out for it. You know, the statements you get from your hospital are almost impossible to decipher. If it's your money, you're trying to figure it out. If it's all paid for by Medicare, then, you know, you're not going to really take the time to go through it.
Now, and here's another one. Move from a paper-based system to electronic healthcare system. Mike, any ideas on that? And I'll bring Kelly in on that. What do you think about that? Bring technology into the play. That's how you can reduce some of the fraud.
You know, and dare we trust the government to do that for us? You know, look at what they've done with the FAA with all these guys watching all the airplanes here. You know, they're running around with 1960 technology, the same stuff that put the man on the moon. Is the computer technology they're using to keep track of airplanes in the air. Why would we think that the government, if we turn this over to the government, that they would somehow all of a sudden bring us into the 21st century in technology? That's insane.
Well, it's a good way to waste a lot of money as well. I think absolutely it can reduce errors, and there are a lot of reasons why it makes a lot of sense. I think it can reduce fraud, but we just don't need to throw money at technology, or you end up wasting a lot of money. I think what we need is a lot of different experiments and innovation in the private sector to find out what works and what's the cost benefit. I think slowly we're getting there. I know several doctors I know are all electronic now. Piedmont Hospital is almost entirely electronic, and I think we're going to get there. And I would certainly agree. I think if we leave this to the government, you're going to get a very expensive system that probably doesn't work very well.
Okay. Now, we talked about tax reform. Let me throw out something. What about elimination of capital gains taxes for investments in health solution companies? What do you think about that idea, gentlemen?
Well, I'll be a little contrarian on you there, Ken. I love reducing capital gains taxes, but I don't like the government picking winners and losers. And I'd rather lower it across the board. Let's not get into we're going to give you a tax cut and not you. I mean, it's a good case, but, you know, everybody's got a good case, you know, not for health insurance. So how about manufacturers and how about this and that? But on the tax issue, tax equity, what Mike brought up is critical. It is unbelievably unfair for somebody that's working at a small business, say at a restaurant, that can't afford to offer insurance, they have to pay for their insurance with after-tax dollars. Now, if you figure there might be in the 25% federal tax bracket, you add the payroll taxes and Georgia income tax, that could be at 46% tax. That really doubles the cost of insurance. It's already expensive. So what do young people do? They say, well, forget that. So the government's policy of tax equity and not being equitable to individuals and just to employers is really one of the root causes of this. I think that's one reason we don't need to go whole hog into this big plan, because you change that one thing, that will ripple throughout the healthcare economy and change so many incentives, reduce the uninsured, and change so many incentives that, you know, we need to see what a bit, kind of an impact that would have just alone, and before we do anything else.
Okay. And here's another one that I got from the Center for Health Transformation: invest in scientific research and breakthroughs. What are your thoughts on that?
I would say that is a place where government could play a role. Let venture capitalists and others do the applied research once the discovery is made. But basic research, like with NASA, like with the colliders that they're doing, and things that the private sector isn't going to fund right now, I think basic research, we have some unbelievable opportunities in neuroscience and regenerative medicine here in Georgia. The research that University of Georgia, Georgia Tech, and Emory are doing is just unbelievable, and I think, you know, this is going to be the century of biology. Last century was the century of physics. It's going to be unbelievable what we're going to see. Human exoskeletons that can help soldiers like G.I. Joe, you know, fight better and not get tired and stronger, have crossovers with health that'll help the people that are quadriplegics walk again. The same technology that helps someone with ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease, control their life with their eyebrows and their eye movements will let a pilot fly an airplane at Mach 5 just with their eyes. I mean, there's so many crossovers and so many exciting things that are going on. I think that is a place for government to put in some money to get that research going.
Hmm. Okay, well, here's another question I want to ask, and Sue will wrap it up after this. Is the question health insurance, or is it health prevention and total health? Mike, what's your thoughts on that? Are we talking about the wrong issues?
Well, it's interesting. I tend to think, you know, Kelly mentioned that, you know, we're being pulled toward the European model. And this may not answer your question exactly the way you phrased it, but I think it's been on my mind for a while, because you look at what's being done in the rest of the world, and you look at what happens in parts of this country when the state governments get very, very large, and you get to a point where it behooves the people in power, especially when they're the liberals, to have as many people in the state on the state payroll as possible. Same thing is going to happen here with the federal government. If all of a sudden the federal government finds itself in charge of whatever the number is, 16, 17, 18% of the entire U.S. economy, by taking over the health care of everyone in this country, that's going to be another several million employees in the federal government. And when you're an employee in government, it behooves you to vote for those guys who are going to increase taxes, because increasing taxes ensures your job viability and your job longevity, because you're being paid by taxpayer dollars. And we see that happening in England. You know, it's not that big of a country. 1.2 million people work in their health services industry. That's the third largest employer in the world, behind the Chinese Red Army and the Indian Railroad.
The
government becomes the main employer, and if you work for the government, you're going to be voting for those guys who want to add more government and raise taxes higher, because that ensures your job stability.
So, Kelly, where should money be spent? Should it be spent increasing jobs in the government sector or in the private sector?
Well, absolutely the private sector. And now, not to say that there are, you know, we need government to enforce the laws, to protect public safety, and enforce contracts and property rights. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
And you can't have free market capitalism without that. But certainly we believe that a smaller, leaner government, like our founders envisioned is going to be the best and most efficient government. I think look at the success of the United States over the last 200 years, and I think we're getting way away from that in a very quick time. And over the last few months, we need to pull that back, and I think that's why you've seen the Tea Parties and all the other movements that have sprung up. I think people realize that we've got to get back to our original vision.
Which gets to the other question that nobody's asking, and that is health care a right? I don't see that in the Constitution, so why are we discussing health care? I mean, if we've got a really great economy, we're booming, and we can take some money and set aside and do that, but if it's not in our Constitution, is health care a right or a privilege? Or
is food a right? Is food and water a right? If you saw somebody dying of thirst outside your office, we need a law to prevent that. We don't have a law to prevent that. It's not in the Constitution. Are we going to go out and help that person? Sure. So, no, it's not a right. I mean, people are going to argue that it's right. Those people that want to argue it's a right are going to argue they want to force you and mandate into this federal system.
Yeah. I mean, it just bugs me. It's just unbelievable. I mean, we're not talking about what we should be doing and what the government should be doing. There's certain things, and Kelly talked about this, that the government should be in control of. But I'm not sure if health care is a right that we should be paying dollars for. So, all right. Here's another. Mike, did you want to say anything about that? Because I've got one other thing I want to ask your opinion of. But go ahead. Go ahead, Mike.
Well, one thing I was thinking about while you were both talking about that is that, no, health care is not a right. But on the other hand, my health is affected by the health of my society in general. You know, if there's nobody watching out for the swine flu or Ebola or the Black Plague that hit Europe back several hundred years ago, you know, I do benefit by having by all of my neighbors being healthier as opposed to being not healthy. So there is a role for the government to play in at that level, but I don't think the government should be taking care of that kind of that kind of thing, because again, we've already got a big enough problem with the acronym we keep on using, OPM, other people's money, and this is just going to get even worse.
Yeah. So, Kelly, we got into this mess because we got away from the Constitution that healthcare was not really in, even retirement was not really a government responsibility. And now, what's the percentage of tax dollars goes towards payments like Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid? Do you know what that is, Kelly?
I don't know that, but I know that we have about $55 trillion in unfunded liabilities, much bigger than the $9 trillion that you normally hear about in our debt. If you count all the off-book promises like Social Security and Medicare, it's about $55 trillion, and about $30 trillion of that is Medicare. So it shows you that this is a huge problem. That's $450,000 per household that we all owe just on – before we add all these other commitments to this another $1 trillion health care plan. So we need to stop digging the hole. We've got to stop government from being the answer to every solution, and we need to have private sector innovation. That's the only thing that is going to balance cost and quality. We want individuals to ration their care. They're going to be rationing. Everybody doesn't get everything they want and anything, but we don't want the government doing that. We want individuals being able to do that, and we have a great tradition of philanthropy in our country. No other nation has philanthropy like we do. Remember, doctors used to do free house calls to the poor. Well, they're not doing that anymore because the government's crowded them out. I have great faith in our government that we also will have a booming look at Georgia. We have all these free clinics as well in low-income areas where doctors do donate their time. We can have more of that. So, government is not the last answer to everything.
And here's another question.
Kelly,
go ahead, Mike.
Kelly mentioned the unfunded liabilities of Social Security and Medicare, and that's huge, and it's something that nobody wants to talk about. And the $30 trillion unfunded liability for Medicare, and that assumes that that builds in the cost shifting that the private sector is paying. if all of a sudden the government starts paying for all of that, there's no more, there's nobody to cost shift that to. So that $30 trillion jumps up to probably $50
trillion. Yeah, if you're not supporting small business and commerce, you're not going to have any money to pay for anything. It just, well, so health concerns, or health, the top health concerns, I believe, are what? Obesity, heart disease.
Diabetes.
Diabetes. These are they avoidable? Is there more prevention that can be promoted than really just say we need more insurance? Kelly, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, over 50% of, according to the CDC, over 50% of healthcare spending is behavior-driven, not genetically driven, it's behavior.
Right,
either eating too much, not getting enough exercise, that sort of things we can control. And then of the healthcare spending, 75 to 80% of the healthcare spending is on a small number of people that have one of those four or five chronic diseases like diabetes, heart disease, and you know, cancer and a few others. So where Safeway saved its money for 40% reduction, it provided for that financial incentives for those individuals to lose weight, to exercise more, to reduce their tobacco consumption, all these things that had a direct impact on the healthcare costs. But it was individuals being incentivized to do that, not mandated to do it. And I think that's where we do need to focus. Prevention can be a way to waste money, but some things work, some things don't. But certainly once we find these individuals, provide financial incentives for health, then that's certainly part of the solution.
And Mike, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I Kelly's right. It's, you know, and it's not just, you know, Kelly says, you know, 50% of CDC says 50% of the people have these self-induced situations. And what really kills the budget is when people have multiple symptoms. They smoke. They're obese. They're not exercising. They're, you know, they've come down with diabetes as a result of that. They've got heart disease, the whole thing. But it's it really comes down to, you know, whether or not you want to incentivize people or whether or not you want to punish them. And I'm sure that if the government takes over this program, they will get to that point, like Kelly says, that of rationing. And rationing is not unusual, but do you want the government deciding? And that, you know, and after rationing, it will be outlawing, you know, the fast food restaurants, or better yet, putting a huge tax on them the way they put a huge tax on cigarettes. And just trying to tax and threaten people.
So ice cream goes up, pizza goes up, potato chips goes up, Kentucky Fried
everything
Chicken,
I like.
Everything go up.
Everything I like.
And here's another thing too. Most people, I think, are insured. They have health insurance. What is, Kelly, is it 80-90% of the country, or
depends on where you work? Yeah, I think it's about 15-20% are uninsured. So.
85. So why throw out the bait with the bathwater? Huh. Anyway, here's one other thing before we wrap up. I got to bring this up. Byron York in the Washington Examiner wrote an article yesterday talking about something that nobody's really discussing, but in the healthcare bill, if you don't have acceptable health insurance plan, guess who has the power to determine that and figure that out for you? The IRS.
Federal government.
The IRS. So when you're doing your taxes, you're going to have to prove that you have acceptable health insurance plan. What do you think about that, guys? Kelly?
Well, I can tell you that acceptable, high insurance, high deductible policy that we're talking about is probably the best way to go, is not going to be acceptable. You're going to have to spend a whole lot more money to get a lower deductible policy, and that, and with all the mandates, and it's going to be incredibly expensive. And that is, this is sort of the slippery language that you get into that scares us the most.
And you get fined. I mean, not only are you got to pay taxes if you mess up there, and then, you know, you got to pay a penalty there, but you're going to get fined because you don't have, you know, acceptable health insurance. Mike, did you know about that? Did you hear about this?
I've read a whole bunch of that bill, and it scares me to death. They're going to have access. They're going to have the ability and the right to access your financial, your checking account, your savings accounts, and your whole finances. to see what your situation is. And, you know, it is a huge step in the direction of George Orwell's 1984. It's scary beyond control.
What are they thinking? I mean, whose body is it? And what country are we living in? I don't believe it. Anyway. All right, so we're going to wrap it up here. Mike, My Georgia Doctor, you can go to www.mygadoctor.com. Last thoughts, Mike? Thank you again for being on the show. I really enjoyed you being on, and thank you for your input and to this discussion and talking about some of the solutions that we all should be aware of besides what's being promoted on the media. But Mike, any closing thoughts?
Just, you know, you can tell I hope it doesn't come through too strong, but you can tell I'm pretty passionate on this subject, and it's it really is a subject that's near and dear to my heart. I think, you know, there's all sorts of solutions out there, and the problem is that there's a plan well beyond just this health insurance, and this is just a means to get to where this government wants to go. And I think it's frightening, and like Kelly says, the tea parties and the people shouting down the representatives at the town hall meetings is just the tip of the iceberg of the anger that's going to be unleashed if they actually put this stuff through.
So let me ask a question to you, Mike. So what do you think that people are listening to this program? I'm going to ask Kelly the same thing. What do you think that we could do to move forward and get a better system in place? What's your recommendation?
You know, it really comes down to just, you know, getting in touch with the representatives right now, because this thing has moved so far down the slope that, you know, somebody's got to reach out and stop it. You know, the representatives and senators don't like you talking to them if you don't live in their district. And, you know, good for me, but unfortunately also is I live in a state and a congressional district where I have like-minded people as my representatives. I can't complain to Tom Price, my congressman, because he and I are on the exact same page. And Johnny Isaacson and Saxby, these guys are pushing this as hard as they can to stop it.
Yeah, we're.
But you know, I can't write to my senator in Massachusetts to complain, because you know I don't live in their state or their district.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Mike. We appreciate your contribution to this discussion about healthcare. Kelly.
My pleasure.
Georgia Public Policy Foundation, what are your last thoughts, comments?
Well, I just appreciate people like you, Ken, that are getting the word out, because we believe that if people have the facts and understand that there are options, they're going to make the right decisions. And so what you're doing in educating people is great, and I would encourage your listeners to go out and talk about this. Talk with their family members and their relatives and their friends and their colleagues, and let them know there are solutions and out there without this government invasion of such a large part of our economy. And that's what we're doing. And you're right. If your congressman is on the right side of this, you can at least call them and thank them. You can send them some money if you have some money. I mean, I've seen so many people that want to become politically active that have never been active before. This is not a false AstroTurf uprising that they talk about. These are real people that are upset about this, and we're available to tell them how to interact, but certainly there are lots of ways that you can be a part of this and get involved and make a difference. So I applaud you for what you're doing. You know, you've got a lot of passionate entrepreneurs out there, and they can make things happen, and they can make a difference.
And don't forget, check out Georgia Public Policy Foundation's www.gppf.org, georgiapublicpolicy.org. So thank you, Kelly. Thank you, Mike, for being on the program. Support My Georgia Doctor. They're a good company. Definitely support the Georgia Public Policy Foundation. They're doing great things and making great contributions to the state of Georgia. Well, that is the show, ladies and gentlemen, healthcare. I'm not going to say anything else. Really enjoyed it. Thank you for listening to the program. Dare to be great, be remarkable, be extraordinary, stay profitable, and by all means, go make that sale. Until next time, you take care.